WSA.org today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We have Jerome Clark getting into the second hour of the Paracast. It seems so much less when we record these shows, for magical reasons.
Yeah, but now I know why my head's soft. I've been beating it against the wall. It totally makes sense now.
Chris O'Brien, that's why Chris O'Brien, when he says the Paracast, he sounds like he's beating his head against the wall. Oh, no. But does it feel like that, Jerry, seriously, or maybe half seriously? Does it feel sometimes you've been involved in the UFO field for so many decades, maybe you're beating your head against the wall that nothing is ever going to be solved. It's just going to go on, and your kids and their kids and their grandkids will still be looking into it?
Well, I didn't mean to sound quite as cynical. I meant that kind of humorously. I think that what I was trying to say more seriously here is that when you start out, you think you are going to be able to solve it. And in fact, what happens over time is that you begin to realize that what's going on is really beyond current knowledge. And if it's ever solved, it's not going to be by you. And the human race itself and science will not solve it until we know more about how the universe works. And so over time, I have developed various ideas. And in the last 15 years or so, I think that I have figured out at least what is going on without explaining it, but at least having some sense of, yes, this is the way it works. Whatever it is, it works like this. And that has given me some satisfaction. So, you know, when I've written my last book and gone on to Wherever Lies Beyond, I'll have some satisfaction feeling that, yes, I did make intellectual progress with this.
Okay, if it's E.T. coming here, E.T.'s coming here now and forever for how many years, we don't know, maybe many centuries, doesn't it have to ultimately play out with some kind of connection between us and them? Or will they say stay forever elusive? Is that part of it, that it's destined to be something where UFOs will never be known unless the tables turn?
See, I think the fundamental problem is kind of expressed in your question, and that is that we just presume without even thinking about it that when we're talking about UFOs, we're talking about one thing. I think we're probably dealing with at least two things which are not related to each other, except on a highly superficial level. But they're epistemologically, that we're dealing with two very different things. And what we call the UFO phenomenon, as defined by, you know, Kehoe and the foundational figures of ufology, we're talking about probably a minority of what people experience as UFOs. Now, I'm not talking about identified flying objects or hoaxes or misinterpretations. I'm talking about two great anomalies, of which the lesser is probably extraterrestrial visitors from another solar system. The other, the really, really puzzling, the really high strangeness aspect of this, is an experiential phenomenon. The UFO that is arguably extraterrestrial in origin is an event phenomenon. It can be traced on radar, leave puzzling ground traces. You know, basically, the core UFO phenomenon you can find demonstrated in Close Encounters of the Second Kind. The high strangeness phenomenon, probably something else, and probably purely an experiential phenomenon, and something related to centuries and centuries of, you know, supernatural experience that is really related to some extraordinarily anomalous state of consciousness, and really so far beyond current knowledge that we don't even really have a useful vocabulary with which to discuss it.
Well, Jerry,
from my point of view, the event phenomenon is the core phenomenon. The experiential phenomenon is the high strangeness aspect, and that exists only in memory and testimony.
Well, you bring up a very interesting point that majority of you know, especially the high strange events are experiential. Now, do you think that this is experiential with the individual, or could there be some sort of collective experiential aspect to this, or is this purely an individual experiencing something strange, tapping into something strange, and having it occur to them, or is it something that could be possibly collective, that we're dealing with something that is manifesting in more than just one person, let's say?
Oh, absolutely. That's what makes it so incredibly puzzling. You know, if all high strangeness experiences were reported by only one person, and many of them are, but not all of them, obviously, yeah, then we could say, well, we're dealing with some kind of real psychological anomaly. But the fact that these things can be collectively experienced really ratchets up the anomalous.
Obviously, I'm not saying only one person is experiencing all this. What I'm saying is this an individuated thing, or is it something that could be part of a collective manifestation?
Yeah, that's what I just said, that this can be a collective experience, and that's what makes it so strange and so hard to explain. And
because then we get into the realm of Jung and the collective unconscious, and you know,
I don't want to go there.
Well, if you're talking about people, you know, groups of individuals for hundreds, possibly thousands of years experiencing something high, strange, and unusual, there is, at least in my mind, there is the possibility that something is emerging out of the collective that certain individuals, either by happenstance or by design, happen to be the ones to experience these things. So,
have you ever read my book, The Unidentified, which was published in 1974? I think
I did many years ago. In fact, it
was exactly the view expressed in that book, and I don't accept it anymore. Okay. I think I don't even accept the existence of a collective unconscious. One of Jung's critics famously said the collective unconscious existed in Jung's library. So I think that terms like this don't really mean a lot. What happens is that there is a culturally reflective aspect, which is at the core of the experience anomaly. In other words, society has its own definition of what an otherworldly encounter is. And the experiences of individuals or small groups of individuals with this other world will reflect the culture's sense of what an otherworldly experience is. And so the nature of the experiences, at least the superficial aspect, the experiential aspects, change over time and in location and geography. And so, you know, there is this kind of, you know, there's cultural and social definition of the experience.
Oh, absolutely.
But the experience itself behind the superficial forms is, you know, is I think the stimulus, whatever it is the same and remains the same over time. And I think that in our own time, our idea of another worldly experience is encounter with extraterrestrials. And I think that if there are real extraterrestrials visiting here, and if the galaxy is as densely populated as many astronomers say it is, wouldn't be surprising at all. It'd be more surprising if they weren't here. But we still have this idea, and that the concept, the experience anomaly takes off from the image of extraterrestrials, because that's our prevailing view of an otherworldly encounter. And there may, at the core of this, be actual encounters with actual extraterrestrials. But the stuff that follows from that, like otherworld journeys, abductions, Men in Black, Mothman, things like this, I think really draw on much older materials that link them to fairy lore and angelic encounters and demonic entities that have figured in all of history, that are real as experiences, but apparently not as events that you could ever document. That the experience or anomaly survives only, as I said earlier, in memory and testimony. There's never anything you're going to be able to bring into a laboratory. You're never going to trace it on radar, but it's going to be very real if it happens to you. It's going to feel
make you scratch your head. Well,
yeah, it's going to be vivid and frightening and startling.
Well, how about a scenario like this, where you have little grays that are seen pretty much exclusively in the United States, and then all of a sudden, as word of this particular form or symbolic sort of image spreads, then all of a sudden you're getting reports from further away from the U.S. and now it's a worldwide sort of almost a cliche, if you will.
We'll have cliches about gray aliens, but we have to do something which does not present a cliche to us, It's a message from our benefactors. We have Jerry Clark. Chris O'Brien's the co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Hi, this is Tamar from Namecheap. We're a domain name and web hosting company, and we really care about our customers. With domain name purchases, Namecheap offers free SSL and free WhoisGuard for a year to protect your identity from spammers. Most importantly, we care about you. If you'd like to learn more, please visit us at radio.namecheap.com, radio.namecheap.com for web hosting and domain name specials. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Namecheap or become a fan of ours on Facebook at facebook.com/Namecheap. See you online.
Fate Magazine provides true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fate Magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Gold. It's like nothing else on Earth. From the Romans through the Renaissance, from the Industrial Age to the Space Age, gold has weathered the test of time. For 6,000 years, gold has remained the ultimate store of wealth. According to the World Gold Council and the U.S. Mint, demand is at an all-time high. The stage is being set for the reemergence of gold as the common-sense alternative to a fiat paper currency that gets weaker every day. Midas Resources is proud to offer the hard-hitting report that arms you with the truth you need to protect you and your family from the Fed's plans for your hard-earned money. Don't gamble with your future. Call Midas Resources today and ask for your free copy of As Good as Gold. Call 1-800-686-2233 for the report the Fed hopes you'll never see. As Good as Gold can be yours by calling 800-686-2237. If you have ever thought about owning gold, you must read this report. Call Midas today at 800-686-2237.
If you own a septic system or if you're facing costly septic system replacement, this message is for you. When you want to stop paying for pump outs and avoid backups, when you've had enough of the foul odors and costly repairs, use BioSafe One Septic Solution. Now there's an easy-to-use, 100% guaranteed answer to all your septic system problems. BioSafe One Septic Solution. BioSafe One is patented and made specifically for all septic systems and made by the same team of scientists who helped clean up the Exxon Valdez oil spill. BioSafe One decontaminates and removes sludge. Stops costly pump outs and repairs and removes septic system stench, all with a 100% success rate. See what gives BioSafe One Septic Solution the advantage over any other septic product at BioSafeOne.com. That's BioSafeOne.com. BioSafeOne.com. Or call toll free 1-866-424-6663. That's 1-866-424-6663. BioSafe One, the guaranteed bio-friendly, money-saving way to clean your septic system.
I'm concerned about food for my family in the event of an emergency, and I know you are too. Are you ready? Don't wait for an emergency to happen. Put a plan together now with quality dehydrated food from Ready Reserve Foods. For nearly 40 years, Ready Reserve Foods has been in continuous operation canning the finest in dehydrated foods. Other companies just broker canned foods. Ready Reserve is the manufacturer, controlling quality from start to finish with double enameled cans and nitrogen packing for maximum shelf life. Ready Reserve offers a balanced selection of fruits, vegetables, dairy products, proteins, and grains. Choose from a variety of pre-selected units or order by individual can to customize your own plan. When you purchase from Ready Reserve Foods, you are buying factory direct at wholesale prices. Call today for a free catalog, 1-800-453-2202, or visit ReadyReserveFoods.com. Call 1-800-453-2202. Ready Reserve Foods. Factory direct, wholesale pricing.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you want to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out on iTunes.
We continue with Jerome Clark, UFO historian, Our co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. And Chris was asking the great question here about the, I guess, the public conscious image of what UFO aliens are. So now it's grays, but the implication, I gather, Chris, is what you're saying is that isn't what they are. It's what we perceive them to be.
Well, it seems to me there's a certain aspect of front-loading. It's almost like if you expect to see something, if you have an unusual experience, you tend to revert to some sort of primal sort of view of it. And if you're front-loaded and you're, the culture, the media has been programming you with a particular image, it seems to me that you would tend to go into that direction to put the details on the experience. So I think the little gray alien is a classic example of that. What do you think, Jerry?
Well, I think there's a lot of truth in what you're saying. Again, it's probably not the whole truth. Little gray aliens were showing up in C3s well before they became a common image in popular culture. But I do agree with you that I think this thing kind of feeds on itself, and that, you know, somebody's imagined experience or even some genuinely anomalous experience phenomenon is going to build on, you know, on images that are known in the culture, that are part of the common language of the culture. So, yeah, I think there's some truth in what you're saying.
Well, you wonder why some of these cultural sort of versions of these high strange type phenomena, how they have a peculiar kind of a regional or subcultural aspect to them. Like, for instance, you tend to see a lot more dark-hairy dwarf/alien reports from South America, as opposed to the types of more clinical gray, sort of, you know, small, diminutive, bald, spindly characters that have been reported, I think, most often in the United States, but as I pointed out, is now a worldwide thing. What aspect or what element of the culture do you think can program the details of individual experience like that? I mean, what is it that makes these particular areas report these particular types of descriptions?
One subject of great interest to me, which I've written about at various times, including in my most recent book, Hidden Realms, is the traditional fairy lore. And fairies had consistent features in a broad sense wherever they were experienced. And they were experienced all over the world, which is a mystery in itself. But each fairy culture was suited to its human neighborhood. So even though the kinds of behaviors and personalities and then just general phenomenology of fairies was the same worldwide, in every area where they were experienced, in every little culture and subculture, the fairies in some ways reflected their human neighborhood. And that didn't make their experiences, the experiences of encountering them, any less frightening or mysterious. But it did suggest that whatever was stimulating fairy encounters, it wasn't a real fairy race that coexisted with us, that existed apart from us, that the experiences were tied to the human expectation of them in some strange way. And something of that may be playing out with, you know, UFO occupant reports.
Well, it's
a real phenomenon. It's a mysterious phenomenon. But we are involved in fashioning our experiences of it.
Well, it's interesting you should point it out, because in one hand, you're saying that there is no sort of, in your mind, the possibility of a collective unconscious that would be able to manufacture these types of commonalities. But on the other hand, you're kind of saying that there is. So where do you draw the line between those two viewpoints? I think this is fascinating stuff. This is to me where the real meat is on the bone in this subject. And
I don't agree this is the meat in the bone. I think this is the shadow. This is not the meat in the bone. The meat in the bone is a close encounter of the second kind, or the radar visual. That's the meat. This is the ghost. We're dealing.
Well, okay. This is the shadow of the meat. This is the burp after the meal. When I say meat in the bone, this is what really excites me about ufology. I am involved right now in a hard data monitoring project. 7 cameras monitoring one of the hottest spots in North America. I do realize that hard data gathering properly, scientific protocols are really the way to go, and I think is the most important approach, and I'm hoping to talk about that later. But in terms of what intellectually really gets me fired up is this shadow realm, this ancient aspect to this whole thing that we've been talking about.
I completely concur with you. That is what I have focused on in the last 15 years, in which I will continue to be most interested in. Yes, it is fascinating.
You know, like Phil Imbrogno and Ellen Guiley right now are writing a book on the gin. The wonderful work that's been done by Phil in this realm, and yourself and others. Jacques Vallée, of course, in a more esoteric sort of way.
I'm not a fan of Vallée, by the way. I want to make that clear.
I'll tell you what.
Or John Keel, for that matter.
Well, tell us why.
I think that in the current issue of International UFO Reporter, I have an extended review of the new book, Wonders in the Sky, by Jacques Vallée and Chris Aubeck. And I encourage people to read that extended review. It's in the International UFO Reporter, is published by the Center for UFO Studies, which needs your support, on whose board I serve. And I think that Vallée has made some legitimate points, but he really has, really, I think, abused the evidence and exaggerated the argument. I just really have a problem. And also Vallée's hostility to the extraterrestrial hypothesis is just simply unwarranted. And the basic problem with approaches like Vallée's, or John Keel's for that matter, is that it's just totalistic. It demands that one size fit all. Well, it seems to me that one thing that should be very clear about anomalies generally and UFO phenomena specifically is that one size does not fit all. That there are things that going on under the rubric of anomalies or UFOs that are fundamentally unalike, and I mean epistemologically unrelated. And unless you can see that, you're just contributing noise to the argument.
So then there is not just a UFO mystery there. Is a UFO mystery and a UFO mystery? You get my
there
point?
Is the event phenomenon and the experience phenomenon. And this plays out through a wide range of anomalies, not just UFOs. And you can even bring it into things like ball lightning, which is a recognized natural phenomenon, but a rather mysterious and elusive one. And you see experience anomalies rolling out of the event phenomenon of ball lightning. And, you've just got to define stuff. You can't just say that, well, okay, there was the RB-47 case, which perfect evidence of a complex, sophisticated, advanced technology that does not exist on Earth and that it is reasonable to infer as extraterrestrial in origin. And then grab a Mothman sighting and say that Mothman sighting overrides hard evidence cases like RB-47 or the Trans-en-Provence landing trace case and things like this.
I'll tell you what, we'll pursue that further detail in a moment. We have Jerry Clark. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack of the Rockoids. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockoids lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockoids is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockoids, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition."
Normal blood pressure, naturally. How would that make you feel?
I'm Don from New Mexico. January of 2000, I had a heart attack. Then my real health began going downhill, and I had high blood pressure, high blood sugar, poor vision, and I really wasn't sleeping well. I was a mess, pretty much.
Don reports dramatic improvements with Heart and Body Extract.
I started taking Heart and Body Extract, and from within a few days, I started sleeping a lot better. My blood pressure normalized, my blood sugar normalized, and my sleep really did improve.
Experience these benefits and more when your body gets what it needs with the assistance of Heart and Body Extract. Order at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. That's hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305.
And folks, I did not expect this at all. By the 7th, 8th, and 9th day, I saw dramatic improvements from taking Heart and Body Extract.
Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, crossbreedholsters.com.
If you're serious about playing college football, give yourself the competitive edge with the National Underclassmen Football Combine. The NUC is the longest-running underclassmen event and the most respected combine and football camp in the nation. Specifically designed to give athletes early recruiting exposure, there's no better time than now to compete in the National Underclassmen Football Combine. Call 888-NUC-MVP1 or go to nationalunderclassmen.com to find out more.
The food storage industry leader has done it again.
Introducing FDG Clubs and Survival Bucks from the Freeze Dry Guy. For over 39 years, the Freeze Dry Guy has served various government agencies and the private sector with the finest in storable foods and emergency rations. If you've wanted to build emergency food supplies but couldn't afford it,
now you can.
Go to freezedryguy.com, click on products, and look for the Freeze Dry Guy Clubs to pay as you go.
Now you can build food storage without going into debt.
Choose from a payment range of $95 to $450 per month.
Our clubs work with everyone's budget.
Plus, when you join Freeze Dry Guy Clubs, you'll get additional rewards. For example, this month, get 10% back in survival bucks on all purchases in the Freeze Dry Guy product line, plus free shipping within the lower 48 states on any order amounts. Hurry, go to freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. The Freeze Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
On air, online, and on demand, we are the GCN Radio Network.
This is Leslie Kane, and I'm with the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and you are listening to the Paracast.
We're trying to look at the lines of demarcation between the various aspects of the UFO mystery, and I have a question that occurs to me, which we'll bring up in a moment. We have Jerry Clark, co-host is Chris O'Brien, I'm Gene Steinberg, you're in the Paracast. So, okay, we have people crying for disclosure. Now, disclosure implies that we know most of the answer and the government will affirm that E.T. is here, but you're painting the picture of something so much more complicated that maybe we have to look for a whole other issue, and if the government has anything to disclose, would they be interested in all this other stuff?
Well, I think that let's just assume for the sake of discussion here that some element of the U.S. government is really interested in UFOs, really is working on it and trying to solve it, maybe has solved some of it. I think that at some point, somebody pointed out to them, look, citing the Mothman are not the same thing as the hard evidence cases, and that if we're going to learn anything, we're really going to have to focus on the hard evidence cases, because all you're going to get, if you look at the Mothman sightings, the Men in Black, and the abductions, and the other world journeys and all that, you're just going to get a bunch of strange, scary stories that, the person who tells them seems perfectly sincere and sane, but it's not going to get you anywhere. These things just don't get anywhere. They have to be seen, the experience anomalies, as pure testimony. It's pure experience and nothing else, because they don't get you beyond that. You can't prove that fairies, for example, exist. You can deduce that even though they don't exist, they can be experienced in some mysterious fashion, which seems manifestly true. And even many folklorists who have studied this lore in the field acknowledge that, yes, these people seem completely sincere, say that they had this experience. But it's the difference between, accepting somebody's story but rejecting his explanation.
Well, okay, so if Stanton Friedman is affirmed and the government says, well, they're coming here from Zeta Reticuli, we don't know their purpose, they do not appear to present a threat to our planet, there you go. We would have maybe a solution there, but this experiential phenomena, that would be a totally different ball of wax, right?
Right. Yeah, I think that if there are extraterrestrials visiting Earth, we'll know that, because that's conceivable. In fact, the argument of ET-oriented ufologists is pretty much indistinguishable from the argument and the reasoning of the SETI-oriented astronomer. It's just that the SETI people don't want to deal with UFO reports, so they make up reasons to ignore them. But basically, the argument is the same, is that we have reason to believe, in fact, growing reason to believe, there are all kinds of extrasolar planets, millions and millions and millions of them. And many of them harbor intelligent civilizations. And if a galaxy, if life is that ubiquitous and the galaxy is that densely populated, it's not at all surprising that we're going to find evidence of their existence. And probably some of them are going to come over here in the vehicles that their advanced technology made possible. Extraterrestrial visitation really shouldn't be a heresy. It may be happening or it may not be happening, but it's not a ridiculous or absurd idea. And some UFO reports indeed are susceptible most reasonably to that explanation. It's the other stuff that really causes all the confusion. The discussion gets clogged up with all kinds of high strangest material, which is just simply unprovable. And so if you reject all the testimony as false or the product of delusion, all you've got left is making up phony explanations that don't explain. There has to be some third alternative that, yes, this is valid testimony, but it isn't what it sounds like. It is unexplainable, maybe inexplicable at this state of knowledge. And these are real experiences, but they don't tell us that there Mothmen exist in the ecosystem, or that there are fairies living in caves and on mountaintops. It just means that in some way we have experiences of extraordinary phenomena, but they're unprovable. They're experienceable, but unprovable.
You know, when you talk to someone like Stan Friedman again, who was on last week's episode of the PowerCast, he'll say that some of these more mystical paranormal type events, this more experiential phenomena, that part of it is because what the UFOs do is so magical to us because they're so far in advance that they can create all this stuff. That this is still part of their reality.
Yeah, I've heard that argument before. What strikes me is really reductive. Now, you have to remember that the UFO phenomenon is a pretty recent arrival in a long, long historical tradition of extraordinary phenomena. The straight extraterrestrial hypothesis, which is what Stan Friedman advocates and often eloquently, would be more persuasive if there were no other traditions of weird events and weird experiences in human history. But there's this enormous background noise of all kinds of just bizarre sights, experiences, phenomena. And to argue as Stan does, it's really to argue, I think, to be maybe charitable here, not a great deal of knowledge of what this material consists of. There is no reason to believe that UFOs existed thousands of years ago and consistently covered themselves up by appearing in all kinds of other ways.
What about visiting earthlings in biblical times? Some of those sound like UFO-related experiences.
Like what?
Well, Ezekiel's wheels.
Oh, I don't think Ezekiel's wheels sound like that. They struck me as just kind of, you know, an experience anomaly, some visionary experiences. You really have to be determined to find evidence of extraterrestrials to unpack that into a UFO report. I think that the stuff in the Bible just sounds like, you know, a whole worldwide tradition of supernatural experiences.
And we just take that at face value, and that's it. It doesn't necessarily relate to what's going on now. So when did UFO arrival appear to have happened? Was it all after World War II, or some of these older cases, do they seem to have some kind of evidence for them? Certainly Charles Fort is an example of older cases.
Well, this is a complicated question, but I'll try to go for the simple answer.
That's what I'm here for.
because it is very complicated. Okay, how do we know when UFOs showed up? Well, we go into reports, contemporary reports, reports that were published at the time of their occurrence. And we look at what the people were describing. If you do that, you can go back two or three centuries with some confidence and find here and there reports that sound very much like modern UFO reports. I found a particularly striking one in an upstate New York newspaper from late 1887 of what sounded very much like they like this. And this was published at the time. These are the reports that give you some confidence that there was a UFO phenomenon, as we understand it, occurring long ago, as in centuries ago, or several centuries ago anyway. The farther back you go, the less certain it gets. And you're dealing with a lot of what just sounds to be classic visionary or experience anomaly stuff. When you get into things like the 1897 airships, you're dealing with something that has been falsely absorbed into UFO history. The phantom airships had nothing to do with UFOs as we understand them. They were very strange, extremely weird, but they weren't UFOs as we understand UFOs. The modern UFO era, I really think, begins after I read Keith Chester's very good book on UFOs in World War II. It's called Strange Company. And Chester shows, I think, that the modern UFO era really began during, not after, World War II, but that the world was so absorbed in fighting this horrendous conflict that people just weren't paying that kind of attention.
I'll tell you, we have to pay attention to this, Jerry. Let's pay attention to the fact that we have Jerry Clark. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you ready to order the official Paracast t-shirt? You asked, we answered. We're now taking orders for the official Paracast t-shirt. It comes in white, 100% cotton. The front of it features the same logo that we have on our community forums. On the back it says, Separating Signal from Noise. To order the official Paracast t-shirt, here's all you have to do. Visit our new online store at store.theparacast.com. One more time, that's store.theparacast.com. You can use a major credit card to place your order for the official Paracast t-shirt. Hey neighbors, we have one more thing to talk about, and that's more merchandise at the official Paracast store. We have hats, we have jackets, we even have a flip video camcorder customized with the Paracast logo at the official Paracast store. It's all now available at the official Paracast store, store.theparacast.com.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 5 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $209, and the Berkey guy will include three Sport Berkey water bottles and ship everything to you free of charge. That's right, three Sport Berkey water bottles and free shipping. An $87 value, yours free. Call the Berkey guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at goberkey.com. That's goberkey.com today.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal. But something seems to be missing.
Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait.
There's more.
You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to libertystickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. Libertystickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
When I had a heart attack at 42, I was not sure what the future held. But a year later, the doctors could find nothing wrong with me and took me off all my medications. What did I do? I took a herbal mixture of garlic, cayenne, and a few other herbs mixed in liquid form. I now call this Extendovite. I would have never believed that a few simple herbs could actually change my life like they did. Now it's your turn to see what the powers of garlic and cayenne can do for you. For only $69.95 plus shipping and handling for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid, you too can begin on your path to better health. For more information, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at heartdrop.com. Extend your life with
Extendovite. America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
You've entered another dimension. You've entered the Paracast.
We continue with Jerome Clark, UFO historian. We're talking about UFOs, the history of UFOs, separating UFOs from other paranormal phenomena. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. So let's look at some of the events that are attached to UFOs and see what you think about them. Was there a crash at Roswell? Did our government recover evidence of this crashed UFO?
Well, I'm probably one of the handful of agnostics on that subject.
Well, you know, there are a lot of those, more than you think.
Oh, good. There should be, because it seems to me that's about all you can do with that, is say that, yeah, this is interesting, and this is false, demonstrably false. And the problem that I have with the Roswell story, and I have a lot of respect for the investigators who put a lot of time in on this, you know, the Kevin Randalls and Don Schmitz, Tom Carey, Stan Friedman, people like that. I really admire their work. And I think they've shown that there's a real historical mystery here. The problem is that the Roswell incident is ordinarily thought of, wreckage in bodies, is not part of history. You could hide the event itself. You could put the bodies in the wreckage in storage and put a lot of guards around them and threaten people who, you know, were there and wanted to talk about it. Yes, that could happen. But you couldn't hide it from history, that this would be something in history that would leave a big mark, that you could hide the story about the crash and the bodies, but you couldn't hide what followed from that. For example, extraordinary technological advancement, changes in national defense policy, and so on. There's no evidence of that. That every attempt to attach something of technological or political or international or defense significance to the crash of a UFO in bodies, it can't be demonstrated.
Yeah, but there's also the other question is, if we had this evidence of greatly advanced technology, we wouldn't know what to do with it. Take your iPhone and go back to 1945 and have them figure it out.
Well, there's some merit to that argument, but I don't think that really is a sufficient rebuttal to it, because something would have been learned. And also, it would have, even if you put technological advancement aside, there is no evidence in anything that happened in international relations, in politics, in defense policy, that indicates that the U.S. government was aware suddenly that the Earth was being visited by extraterrestrials of uncertain motive and uncertain capacity. That would have all kinds of national defense implications, which could not be hidden.
So those things couldn't be hidden even if the original case could be. So what were these people remembering 20, 30 years later, or were their memories just so influenced by ongoing events and popular culture that they added more into the story than maybe was present originally?
I don't know, and none of us knows. And some of this testimony is indeed impressive and intriguing. There's no question about that. It's just that Roswell, like so much of what we deal with in anomalistics, really exists in testimony, but nowhere else. You have this really interesting testimony from, you know, some of these people seem completely sincere and plausible, and their testimony is hard to explain. But that's all it is. It's about as extraordinary a claim as you could possibly make, tied to virtually nothing but anecdotal testimony. And so logic demands that you say, well, whatever happened, it wasn't what it was claimed to be by these people. But you don't know that. And so pretty soon, it's just a big muddle. And so when people ask me what I think about Roswell, I answer them as honestly as I can by saying it's a historical mystery.
And leave it at that. And, of course, then maybe Colonel Corso didn't go around feeding night goggles and printed circuit inventions to private industry.
No, I don't think so.
So what was his thing there? Do you think it was just the old guy trying to make some money for his family before he went on to the next life?
I can't read his mind, and I'm not going to speculate. All I can tell you is that I remember talking with John Alexander, who knew Corso well and didn't believe his story, but thought that Corso acted like a guy who's completely sincere. And I think that, you know, there are people walking around the world who sincerely believe things that didn't happen in their own lives. So I don't know. All I really care to know is that his story is just simply not true and not capable of belief. And I think that it's really kind of a sideshow to the basic Roswell controversy, which I think, as I say, remains, you know, puzzling, but it's just hard to come to any conclusion from it.
What about these people who say, okay, we want the government, this repeats what Kehoe was asking in the 50s, we want disclosure, we want the government to tell us what it knows, they must know something.
Oh, I think that's probably a pretty futile gesture. You know, it's based on a lot of presumptions about what the government knows, what, you know, that I'm not willing to make myself. And also, I think that the disclosure movement is really, you know, uncomfortably reminiscent in some ways of the contactee movement in the 1950s, you know, based on the premise that there are, you know, benevolent space beings here and the evil government is trying to, you know, stop them. And it just, to me, is kind of irrational, it's, you know.
So we're not going to be seeing you speaking at the X conference anytime soon.
I don't imagine, no.
And they won't be asking you. But the other question, of course, being, do you think it's possible, if E.T. is here, that any earthly government has had any contact with them at all?
Well, you know, rumors like that, I actually write about them in my encyclopedia. And as a folklore, the stories were circulating as early as probably 1948, that Harry Truman had met the aliens in Alaska. And they had discussed them.
This is before, ladies and gentlemen, Sarah Palin lived in Alaska.
And so this is, you know, this is a body of folklore that's been around for a long time. And I've never seen, you know, any evidence for it. I would say that it's a priori impossible because I don't know. But I could say that no persuasive evidence has ever emerged that anything like that has happened.
So Eisenhower didn't go and meet the aliens at
That was another one from 1954. That was a famous one, yep. But there's a whole bunch of them that went over the years. That there was one from Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico in 1964 that had UFOs landing and the landing being filmed and the aliens coming out and being met by officers at Holloman. And, yeah, I mean, these stories have always been around.
But you don't take any of them seriously. So does that mean that the government is just either uninterested because there's no overt threat, or they have simply not had any of this alleged communication? It just stays out there one step away, one step beyond.
I think that probably what the U.S. government is doing, as we discussed earlier, is probably has some little agency that on some level is monitoring, you know, puzzling UFO sightings and then meeting periodically to say, well, you know, we've got this information and there was that case and trying to make sense of it. That's probably about as close as they get to to the actual UFO intelligences.
What about the possibility of man-made technologies being trotted out and people, you know, misidentifying them as something alien or something off planet? Do you think we have the technological capabilities now to possibly put anti-grav technology operational? Or,
well, I don't know about anti-gravity technology, but I do believe that as our aviation technology gets ever more sophisticated and amazing, yeah, I think that you really do now have probably secret aircraft that are mistaken for UFOs. And I think that that's unlike what it was. The very first UFO theory in the summer of 1947, when the modern UFO age began, was that these were secret military experiments. Well, of course, we've known for a long time that they weren't. But now, there, I think there is some credibility to that as an explanation for some reports. Yeah.
Yeah, if I'd seen a stealth fighter back in, let's say, 78, 79 fly over, I would have probably reported it as a UFO.
And so no doubt, that's what happened. Thing. Sure.
Absolutely.
Well, we have some questions from some of our Paracast Forum members. And
I'll tell you what, we're going to bring them up in the next hour of the Paracast. A reminder here, you can reach us. You can write to us. news@theparacast.com, that's news@theparacast.com, or go to forum.paracast.com, that's forum.paracast.com, where you can sign up, become a member of our forums, give yourself a username, get involved, and then you have the opportunity, like some of our members are already taking advantage of, and that is to ask, leave questions for our guests, and we try to ask many of them. Jerry Clark is our guest. Chris O'Brien's the co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
The people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.